Baseball Tonight, the podcast.
This is the Baseball Tonight podcast for Wednesday, June 7th, 2023. And today will be better than yesterday. Sarah Abbott is working from her home back in the area around Bristol, Connecticut. I'm Buster Olney at my home in Montana. And Sarah, yesterday, a lot of big news in baseball. One of the best players is apparently headed the injured list. The guy who has been the best pitcher on the planet for most of the last 6 years is out indefinitely. An all-star was sent to the minor leagues, and a superstar prospect was promoted from the minor leagues. And Sarah, his general manager could have held that news for one day, right? He could have saved it, broke that news on our podcast. What's up with that?
I know. I was like, are you serious? But you called him out on it. So, but I was like, this is, missed it. Just so close.
That's right. Nick Kroll, general manager of the Reds, who you hear from in a little while. We taped an interview with him on Tuesday evening after news broke that Ellie De La Cruz has been promoted to the big leagues. And, you know, hear me give him a hard time about, hey, you could have saved that news for the pod because we had all these questions lined up. When are you going to promote Ellie De La Cruz? He made his major league debut against the Dodgers on Tuesday night. He had a great first plate appearance, drew a walk, which says something about his patience at the plate. And then when he came up in the bottom of the third inning, this is what happened.
Gonsolin back to the plate. Fastball covered right center field. That's going to the wall, and the big fella is turning it on. He'll round first, and he will roll into second. And the first major league hit for Ellie De La Cruz is a double, and it was an absolute bullet.
So he ripped the ball to right center field. It was the fastest any Reds player has hit a ball. I think it was 112 miles an hour, and he ran home to second faster than any Reds player this year. That was his first major league hit. That sound from 700 WLW. The Reds were down by a run, bottom of the ninth inning. Jake Fraley at the plate. And this happened.
Here's the lefty's 2-2 pitch. Hit him. Absolutely drilled Fraley in the right elbow. And the Reds have tied it on a bases loaded hit by pitch.
Then Matt McClain, who I talked to Nick about in our conversation last night, had a chance to end the game. This is how the game finished up.
Swing, and there's a fly ball left center field. This will get the job done. Hayward giving chase. It won't matter. It drops anyway. And here comes Stuart Fairchild to score the winning run. Matt McClain and the Reds walk it off, overcoming an 8-3 Dodger lead to beat the Dodgers 9-8 with three in the ninth.
The Braves face the Mets, and the Mets actually had a lead top of the third inning. Pete Alonso at the plate.
1-2 to Alonso, pitch. Swing and a high fly ball to left center field. Rosario turns, and this ball is gone. Halfway up the seats in left center field, number 22 for Pete Alonso. And it's the second two-run home run of the inning for the Mets.
That from WCBS. But the Braves would come back.
Two out, runner at third. Tie game, the pitch. Swung on, hit up the middle. Escobar knocks it down, can't come up with it. Go-ahead run scores. Arcia with a two-out base knock. 5-4, Atlanta.
Atlanta wins 6-4. The Diamondbacks, the Nationals. And the Diamondbacks applied the coup de grace in the top of the seventh inning.
Long hold by Cool. Now the pitch, swing, fly ball, center field. Call back, onto the track, at the wall, leaps, and he can't make the catch. That ball is gone. A two-run shot for Pavin, his sixth of the year. And the Diamondbacks hang 10 on the Nationals. It is 10-5.
That sound from Arizona Sports, 98.7 FM. The Diamondbacks in first place in the National League West. Rangers, the Cardinals, a reprise of the 2011 World Series. Marcus Semien came to the plate with his personal hitting streak, 24 games. This is what happened.
And he hammers that one in the air, out to right field. Walker ranging back, it's over his head. Two runs are in, into third, Tavares. And it's a two-run double. The throw gets away. Here comes Leone. and Semien goes to third. So he clears the bases, his hitting streak goes to 25 games, and the Rangers lead it 5-2.
So his hitting streak now at 25 games. The Rangers go on to win 6-4. Texas now 40-20. We're going to be talking about that with Boog Sciambi coming up here because, you know what, not all the news was good for the Texas Rangers. They announced before the game that Jacob deGrom needs Tommy John surgery. He'll miss the rest of this year and a lot of next year at least. The Blue Jays face the Astros. George Springer, facing his old team, did some damage.
The 0-1. Springer rockets it. Deep left center field. Back at the wall. Myers jumps in the air. It's gone! A go-ahead two-run home run for George Springer.
Toronto wins that game 5-1. The sound from Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Kevin Gausman pitched really well. He's in the conversation for best pitcher on the planet. White Sox, Yankees at Yankee Stadium. In the top of the fifth inning, Chicago took a 3-0 lead.
The pitch, swing and a blast. In the air, out into deep left, and he's done it again. Two-run homer up into that second level of bleachers.
Just to legitimize that he has real power to go along with Oppo power in the short porch. Let's just say that that's about as far as a ball that he's probably ever hit in his life.
That's ESPN 1000. Lucas Giolito threw 6 no-hit innings, but he required 100 pitches to do that. That no-hitter carried the bottom of the seventh inning against the White Sox bullpen. And this is what happened.
Driven into left center field. On the run is Benintendi, and Robert is going to fall between them. That's the Yankees' first hit. Here comes Calhoun. That's the Yankees' first run. It's an RBI double for IKF. 3-1 White Sox.
Still, the White Sox win 3-2. After the game, Yankees manager Aaron Boone announced that Aaron Judge is headed to the 10-day injured list with a toe injury that, of course, was suffered when he went in to make that incredible catch, went in the fence at Dodger Stadium on Saturday. Here's Aaron Boone speaking with reporters.
He is going to go on the IL. He's got a contusion and a sprain of the ligament. So he had a PRP shot tonight. And then, I mean, the biggest thing now is you know, trying to get the swelling out of there. Had some improvements today. But, you know, now we'll just see where we are in the coming weeks and or days and then, you know, week. But the biggest thing is getting the swelling out of there now.
The Brewers, the Orioles, a great game between these two teams. It was 3-3, bottom of the ninth inning. Joey Weimer at the plate, and this happened.
1-2 pitch. Breaking ball. Hammered down the left field line. This ball is going to one-hop the wall, and this game is over. Joey Weimer with his second walk-off of the season, and the Brewers third, and they win it 4-3 in 10.
That from 620 WTMJ. The Mariners, the Padres, two teams with struggling offenses, but the Mariners kind of broke out. Top of the sixth inning.
Here's the 3-2. Swung on. Blasted center field, driven deep. Tatis back looking up. It is gone. Into the Padres bullpen. Teoscar Hernandez rides it out, and the Mariners have the lead 2-1. A solo blast and a big one for Teoscar.
That from Seattle Sports, 7:10 a.m. The Phillies, the Tigers. It's June, which means Kyle Schwarber, it's his month. It seems like he hits a home run every day, every year in the month of June. And that didn't stop on Tuesday night.
15 homers, 33 runs batted in for Schwarber. As Alexander deals, and the pitch is lifted high and deep, right field. Going back, McKinstry, he's looking up at the wall. It is gone. Leadoff home run for Kyle Schwarber. His first of the year. And it's 1-0 Phillies here in the bottom of the first.
That was Scott Fransky, Sports Radio 94 WIP. Phillies won that game 1-0. Sarah, what else you got?
All right, Buster. Well, tonight is game 3 of the NBA Finals. And as always, the Hoop Collective has you covered. Brian Windhorst is there to preview tonight's game with Tim Bontenz and Tim McMahon. So make sure you check that out wherever you are listening to this podcast.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of the show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Buster. Just go to Indeed.com/Buster right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/Buster. Terms and conditions apply. For the ones who get it done, Grainger offers high-quality supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as access to product specialists who have the knowledge and experience to answer your toughest questions. Plus, their commitment to being your safety partner can help you keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by.
The man.
Swing and a high fly ball out towards left field.
The voice.
That one well struck.
The legend.
On its way out of here.
Boog Ciambi on Baseball Tonight.
And this place is going bananas.
Boog Ciambi, play-by-play on ESPN Radio and also for Cubs games on the Marquee Network. How you doing today, Boog?
I'm good, brother. How you doing?
Wait, what happened to the legend voice? Like, what's going on? Like, you're so quiet. You're so reserved.
Well, it's early in the morning. We're in California, and I don't want to wake up the people in the rooms next door. That's what
it
happens.
It wouldn't take much either, right?
No, not really. It wouldn't even need to be like a triple for the cycle. It would need to be like a single, and probably going to wake them up.
Well, thanks for getting up on the West Coast to do this. You and I talked about talking last week, but you had so much going on in advance of Lou Gehrig Day. I want to ask you about that in a bit, but there was so much huge baseball news yesterday. We get word the Texas Rangers, Jacob DeGrom, is going to miss the season. He needs Tommy John surgery. His hope is that he comes back at the end of the 2024 season. And wow, Boog, he was emotional in speaking with reporters. Give a listen to Jacob DeGrom.
It stinks. You want to be out there. It's just not ideal, but, get this behind me and give it all I got and, come back. The goal, I'm going to set a goal to try to be back next year towards the end of the year. So work towards that and, hopefully we're in a playoff run next year. But the most important thing is this year. And these guys that we have, like I said, it's a special group and, want to be here rooting them on.
Yeah, so Jacob DeGrom, you and I would agree, Boog. I mean, when he pitched, he's like a guy, he doesn't change expression. When he pitches, when he's dominating opposing hitters, he's not someone who's really, demonstrative on the mound. But wow, to see tears streaming down his face yesterday, it's a reminder that, yeah, we talk about the money and we talk about whether the contract is worth it for the Rangers, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Underneath all that, you're talking about a guy who wants to pitch, who wants to win a championship.
Yeah, they're humans, right? I mean, it's something that I think from time to time we forget, but there are guys who are, human with emotions and they're fans. And I think the thing for me, when you look at, watching guys of that caliber, I feel for them because I think it's just guys that are that great are just so good for the game. And I think that whether we realize it or not, part of why we like watching sports, we like watching greatness. I mean, I would submit that peak Jacob DeGrom is in a conversation for the best pitcher ever, like at his best. You're talking about a guy that is as good as anybody that's ever walked the earth. It's just, you just got to remember that they're, you know, these kids started as, or the guys started as kids with dreams in Little League, you know? So, you know, I'm doing the Cubs out in Anaheim, and Seiya Suzuki is a huge Mike Trout fan, and he's dying to meet Mike Trout. And he hasn't met him yet. And he was talking about what would it be like. And he said he was going to be nervous. He's not sure if he'd know what to say, you know? And it's like, that's the, another piece of the spectrum where, yeah, they're just human. They're you and I, you know, and with DeGrom responding that way, it's powerful.
Well, and he was someone who the Rangers signed hoping to be the ace of their rotation. He hasn't been available for most of this season, and yet this is a team that's 40-20. They're piling up runs. It's hard. Yes, in October, that Jacob DeGrom that you mentioned, peak Jacob DeGrom, is someone, of course, that you would want. You know, in terms of controlling October bats, I don't think this will affect the Rangers that much, Boog, as they move forward because of how powerful that offense is.
Yeah, the other thing I would say is that, and I don't mean this in a wins above replacement way, I mean it in just a general way, we almost always overstate the win value associated with a single person. I mean, it's wild, but you can sit there and just time and time again, losing one player from a baseball team, it's hard for it to submarine a season. It just is. It we always think it's going to more than it actually does, in my opinion. I think you can always err on the side of under that rather than over on the effect.
And to your point, you remember last July, as the Braves are beginning to cut into the Mets lead, I remember the conversation being, yeah, but at some point, Jacob DeGrom and Max Scherzer are going to come back from injury, and then everything will be right with the Mets. And basically, they play 500 ball in the games that those two guys started.
Right. And, you know, there's just, yeah, there's countless examples of, you know, forgetting that the Atlanta Braves won a World Series in 2021. Oh, yeah, that's right. Acuña was done for the year. You know what I mean? So it's one of those deals where it just doesn't normally play. I think especially in baseball, I think it just doesn't always play out the way you think. I think, yeah.
All right, let's go from the ground level, looking at this Ranger situation, to go to 30,000 feet. My growing sense, Boog, within the industry is that the team investment in starting pitchers, you're going to start to see a slide. I think we've already started to see a slide. You know, and we've had some recent examples of where teams have sort of forged ahead in the face of middle information, right? Because, as you know, executives always say, that, you know, the biggest indicator of injuries to come is our injuries in the past. The Washington Nationals plowed ahead with Steven Strasburg, 7 years, $245 million. It might be that he throws a total of 31 and a third innings for that $245 million. The Yankees plowed ahead with Carlos Rodon, $162 million, despite that extensive injury history. The Chicago White Sox, his team, not even giving him a qualifying offer because of what they were concerned with. And the Rangers making this huge deal with Grom, despite the fact you had all these red flags all over the place. You know, they love the peak DeGrom that you referenced. But boy, these are three examples of teams moving through the information. And at a time when the number of innings being thrown by starting pitchers is going down and more teams seem interested in 2 and 3 year deals, I do think that there's going to continue to be a trend where you're not going to see those Garrett Cole type contracts, those whopper contracts, and teams saying, you know what, we're comfortable, you know, spending less in starting pitching than we were in the past.
Yeah. I mean, I don't disagree. You know, it's funny. It dovetails nicely into, you know, a question that the Cubs are going to have to figure out, because right, Marcus Stroman has been really, really good for them. And he's 32 years old. You don't have, you know, a ton of comps for 5'7 righties, who, by the way, doesn't have much of an injury history. He's got a pretty unique body. But at 32, he's got 1 year left, or he can opt out. He's going to opt out. And then the Cubs question would be, if they want to keep him, obviously it's got to be plus two, right? I mean, so it's next year plus, but like, are you willing to go beyond that? Are you willing to go for his age 34 season, his age 35 season, his age 36 season at, you know, 20 something per? So I think you're right. I think you're going to see, I'm not going to say never, but I think you're going to see probably a decline in what you're talking about.
Yeah. It will be interesting to, as we go forward. I'm going to start actually working on a story about that today. And the conversation club executives will be interesting. Marcus Semien, I know your favorite thing are the on pace numbers, Boog. Yes, you love it when I tweet out, you know, this player is on pace after 30 games to finish the year with these numbers. Marcus Semien has a 25 game hitting streak, and he currently, Boog, is on pace to score 146 runs, to drive in 133, to hit 50 doubles, 5 triples, 24 homers. He's been ridiculous this year. What do you think?
Well, the first number, I think he's playing with good teammates, would be my first thought. But the rest of them, yeah, they're very, very impressive. I mean, they score a lot, you know what I mean? So there are people on base in front of them, and there are people that are, you know, knocking him in behind him. That's, that lineup is ridiculous. It's pretty amazing. You know, you look at the, you know, the arc of his career, and a guy who made 35 errors one season at shortstop for the Oakland A's turned into a gold glover at second base in 21. Did he hit 45 homers, I think, with the Blue Jays that he parlayed into the 7-year deal? So, you know, that's a guy who has, you know, over time, you know, done the work and you know, earned it. So he's quite a player.
He's going to be in the MVP conversation. So is Aaron Judge whenever he gets back from the injured list. The other day when he went, when he made that incredible catch at Dodger Stadium, you know, the next day we were all marveling about the fact that he went through the fence. It actually wasn't a gate. He actually knocked over a fence. So he beat the fence up top. But I think what was missed in the moment was Dodger Stadium, that part, those 6 inches of concrete at the bottom, that prevailed over Aaron Judge. I mean, he hit that with his right foot. He hit that space so hard. It's not nice to me he wound up on the injured list. What about you?
It was pretty violent. And, you know, obviously, if you're the Yankees, you got to take it cautious because you need him healthy. He's just such a crucial part of their offense. He's one of the best players, one of the best hitters in the game. The one part of that, I don't know how much or you've discussed this at all, and I know the guys in the league office are going to get cranky with me about this, but I always like talking about like stupid rules. I don't know how much people have touched on the idea, but because he went through the fence, the runner first was entitled to second base because he left the field of play.
Right.
That's stupid.
It was like stupid.
If one thing, if he flips over the fence, I mean, it's a hard task, but like, it shouldn't be his responsibility for this fence to be strong enough to hold him in, like, so that there needs to be some discretion there. I mean, I just think sometimes we do, you know, that a rule is a rule is a rule, whatever. But just in that spot, that's pretty silly that a base was awarded because the fence couldn't hold Aaron Judge.
Yeah, I had met with the umpires, that same umpiring crew, before Sunday night's game. I wish they had asked them about that. And I even wonder if those guys would benefit 2020 hindsight and go, yeah, you know, with umpires' discretion, maybe the it would have landed differently. The Blue Jays send Alec Manoa down to the minor leagues. They're not even assigning him to AAA, Boog. They're signing him to essentially their spring training complex in Florida, most of all because he needs a mental break. You know, Tim and I talked yesterday in the podcast about precedent for this, and we really struggled, you know, for a guy to be pitch at an all-star caliber 1 year and to be sent all the way back down the next year so early in his career. We came up with Mark Friedrich, but that was injury related. We came up with Rick Ankiel. That was related, as you know, to the yips. I mean, the closest thing is Roy Halladay, right, who was not at that level that Manoa was last year. He's one of the top three pitchers in the American League. And I think it's the Blue Jays doing exactly the right thing. Like, above all else, I know they don't have a lot of depth in AAA. There's not a perfect solution for them to plug that spot. The most important thing is get Alek Manoah right.
Yeah, no question. And, I mean, it's got to be, you know, working together with him, right? I mean, that's the big thing. So, yeah, it's stark how he's fallen off. I mean, when Roy was sent down to the Florida State League, he hadn't achieved the little success that Manoah has. So I certainly hope that he's able to reclaim the all-star form that we saw.
Luis Arraez, two hits last night. He's batting .401. That's kind of a shocking number when we're talking about playing games in June. But a more shocking number to me, Book, is the fact the Marlins are 34-28. They're in second place in the National League East. I mean, give credit to Kim Ng for, you know, some of the moves she made. She had very specific things in mind when she made decisions. And I think Skip Schumacher, he's a growing star as a manager. You and I have talked about Craig Counsell, Alex Cora, Terry Francona, you know, guys like that being difference making. I think Skip Schumacher has a chance to be that type of guy too, because he's so detail oriented.
No doubt. And again, they've done a good job with run prevention. Arraez is something to watch, but it's not a particularly good offense. And they've still pitched, and I'm surprised. There's no doubt.
What do you think the chance of Arraez hits 400?
Zero. I mean, and I just say that just because it's just the league's too hard now, man. It's just too hard. You know, it's like, I mean, one of the numbers last year in the postseason, players hit 211 in the playoffs. 211. Now, that's the peak level of competition. But, you know, last year, Major League batting average was 243. It was the lowest since 1968. And, like, they look mound the next year. So I just think for where we are right now, you know, Major League average has been fluctuating basically between 247 and 248 for most of the year. That's what the average hitter hits, 247, 248. And you just have to deal with too many pitchers. There's too many guys coming out of the bullpen throwing a bazillion in the sixth inning. So I would love to see it, and I will root hard for it, but I would say zero.
All right. I'd love to ask you these questions from 30,000 feet. Because you'll tell me when you think I'm full of crap without hesitation. I was mentioning to Tim yesterday that let's say the Marlins slide back and they're more of what we expected them to be going into the year. I mentioned to him that relief pitchers, their peak value is when you get to July in terms of trades, right? Because teams in the wintertime, they can say, oh, we'll figure the bullpen out. And a guy is going to throw 60 innings. They're not going to be as invested in that guy in January as they are in July. So teams will put relievers out in the marketplace. I think Luis Arraez would be that type of guy. Like once we get in during the wintertime, when the Twins had him on the trade market, I don't think he was looked at as being a guy that everyone was seeking because he's not a good defender. But when we get into July and we're coming up trade deadline, if the Marlins aren't contending, man, that's the type of guy contending teams would love.
Sure.
Because he puts the ball in play for exactly what you're talking about, a 211 batting average in the postseason. Are you co-signing?
I mean, that he would have value for sure. I mean, I don't think there's any doubt that you can't escape the idea that the guys that are able to hit, it's way harder. So there's fewer of them. I'm with you on that.
All right. So we mentioned last Friday was Luke Gehrig Day. You've done so much work with ALS, fundraising, ALS awareness. Tell me what it was like for you. Because I know Sarah Langs, you worked with Sarah Langs. What it was like to see her being honored at Citi Field. It felt like, you know, she was everywhere over the last week.
Yeah, I got to talk to her the other day, too, and just she was saying how she was kind of overwhelmed and still sort of processing it just because it was like, you know, Sarah everywhere, which delighted me just because of how much she loves the game. I thought it was really good that there's, you know, a spotlight on her and a spotlight on ALS. I feel like the Lou Gehrig Day has, you know, it's brought more awareness as it's gone on. I mean, I think personally, it's for me, I sort of go back and forth. Like it makes me happy that there's more attention and people are becoming, you know, more aware. And hopefully we move towards a cure and, or at least, you know, helping people, but it's also hard, you know, it's hard to see her sitting there. And, it was a really nice moment. It just, you know, Lou Gehrig out in San Diego for the Cubs was cool. Yeah, it's not always easy, you know?
You were telling me before we got started about an interaction that you had last night.
Yeah.
If you could just relate that story.
It was wild. I did the Cub game last night with Doug Glanville. Dougie had rented a car, so we walked out to our parking spot, and there was a van parked right next to our car, and the back was open. And as I go to put my stuff in the trunk of our car, I noticed that there's someone in a wheelchair. And when I turn and look, it's a group of Cub fans. And the woman is in a wheelchair and she's got a blanket on. And as I start, and she recognizes me. And so her eyes get kind of big. And then the guy recognizes me and their friend recognizes me. And Dougie and I go over, you know, so we start to talk about the Cubs. But immediately the man says, my wife was diagnosed with ALS 7 years ago. And actually 3 years ago, Project Main Street helped her with X, Y, and Z. And it was just one of those, you know, whatever moments you want to say, God moments. I don't know. It was just, and we probably spent, you know, 15, 20 minutes talking with them in the parking lot and just, to be parked right next to them, you know, Cub fans, a woman who has ALS. It was wild.
Well, you do amazing work. You know, and every year we thank you for that. It's inspired, and you know, I definitely want to get you on at this time to talk about that. So thanks for getting up, Boog, and I thank you on behalf of your neighbors that didn't say gone and your home run voice. Okay, that would have been ugly for them.
You're the best, brother. It's great to see you.
I wanted you to hear some more from Jacob deGrom and his emotional conversation with the reporters yesterday after news broke that he's out for the year. Here's deGrom talking about how one day he would feel good and then the next day he wouldn't.
Well, it was just like, so I have days where I'd feel really good, days where I didn't feel great. So it was kind of riding a roller coaster there for a little bit. And I threw one bullpen and I was like, okay, I think I'm moving in the right direction. And then the next day I would come in and didn't feel great. And I was like, all right, this is acting really weird. And then it was just so up and down, just didn't know really, you know, what they said there originally, we saw some inflammation, was hoping that would get out of there. You know, you get an MRI right after you pitch, I feel like anybody would have inflammation. So, I was hoping that would get out of there and I would be fine. But, you know, it just didn't work out that way.
DeGrom was really upset, but at least now he knows the path that he has going forward. Give a listen.
The one thing that I've kind of talked about is now we know what it is. So, if anything, at least it's clear. Like, if I would have got it looked at again and it was, okay, we're not really sure, then where you at? You're like, okay, I'm trying to throw. I can't do it. So at least this is clear. Like, we know, get it fixed and work towards coming back.
You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish.
Yes, the clutch hits, the strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems, with nothing on your roof. So whoever's up there, whether it's roofers, Santa, birds, old-timey chimney sweeps, moody teenagers, thrill-seeking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish. But you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root, 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 with nothing on your roof. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit DirecTV.com. Sign up today. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package.
Vivid Seats wants to get you to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seats rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As the official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code BASEBALL. That's code baseball. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats. Experience it live.
Nick Kroll is the general manager of the Cincinnati Reds. And Nick, I got to say, I'm really kind of upset with you. Like, I, you know, it was my first question to you today. I had a big plan, had a whole script drawn out. When are you going to promote Ellie De La Cruz? And you jumped it. Like, what is that about?
Today, I'll give it to you.
I'm curious about what was behind this decision.
You know, well, first, Nick Senzel went on the injured list today. He banged his knee, getting scratched last night in our game. So we needed a player to come up. We were pretty set to bring Ellie up this week. We've talked about it. You know, the improvements he's made coming into this year, both offensively and defensively, and where he's gone. So, you know, we just feel that he pushed through that barrier and you know, when Nick got hurt, it was a time to bring him up.
So give me a pure evaluation of Ellie De La Cruz as a player now as he reaches the big leagues.
You know, he's got top end speed, top end arm, you know, still getting better as a fielder. Has played both shortstop and third base. You know, he's got very good bat to ball contact skills. What he's done this year is really done a good job of taking better at bats and continuing to learn. And I told the story the other day. He had I went and saw him a few weeks ago, and he started to change his approach a little bit. And he had a runner on third in AAA, and less than two outs. Just need to get the ball in play to get the guy in. He took ball one that was close, then took ball two and three, had a slider in the middle of the plate where he took for a strike, then swung and fouled one off. So, you know, you figure 3-2, he's going to come after and see what happens. And guy threw a ball off the plate. He took it for ball four instead of trying to chase out of the zone, which was a really, good insight into the maturation process of where he's gone as a player this year. It's been really fun to watch.
So it's always the first numbers that I look at when, you read about prospects, you hear them being touted, go right to the walk strikeout ratio, which always, to me, tells me so much about the player. And there's no doubt, you know, he struck out a lot this year, 50 strikeouts in 38 games, but the 26 walks. So it's not like he's got 10 walks and 50 strikeouts. 26 walks, tells you that he seems to be gaining command of the strike zone.
And I think he had 10 or 15 in the first week and a half that he was in AAA this year. He started the year with an injury, came back, had between 10 and 15 in the first week or 10 days of his AAA season. And then since then, he's cut his strikeout numbers. He's increased his walk numbers. But it's the pitch-to-pitch quality of that bat that we're seeing with him that he's gotten better. That's been very encouraging.
What's your plan for him as you move forward?
He's going to come up. He's going to play some third. He's going to play shortstop. And then hopefully he'll just be another good quality young player on this club.
So it was about a year ago. I remember talking to Ben Cherington. You know how understated Ben is. And yet you could just feel his excitement about what he felt like that they were trying to build. And I was thinking about that today because you must feel the same way. Like there are all these different pieces that are really beginning to fall into place for you.
Yeah, I'm very excited. I mean, you look at players. We had Andrew Abbott make his debut last night, and he pitched six shutout innings, pitched really well. Matt McClain came up a few weeks ago. We've got guys that came up at the beginning of last year, Nick Lodolo, who's hurt right now, but Hunter Green as well. And then you've got a lot of other young players. I think we look at Jonathan India and Tyler Stevenson as the veteran guys on this club, and they've only played in the big leagues 2 years. So it's been a lot of fun to watch the young players on this team. Alexis Diaz has been lights out in the closer role. It's been a lot of fun to just watch those kids grow up together, mature, and continue to progress into the big leagues.
What sort of culture are you feeling when you go in the clubhouse?
It's a very youthful culture. I worked for the A's a long time ago as an intern, and you know we had a very young team. A lot of guys got along, hung out together. It's very similar. It's really good to have that group, and they're just having fun playing together and maturing and learning together. And you know we don't quit. This team does not quit. We were down the other night to the Brewers 10-1 and came back and you know had the tying run at second base in the ninth inning. And, you know I think it's a testament to what our coaching staff has done with this group, and it's been a lot of fun to just watch them grow from spring training day in, day out, and then all the way through the major league and minor league seasons, depending on where they've been.
So I've got specific questions about three different guys. You mentioned Matt McClain. Tell me about what, in your eyes, is going to come next for him in terms of his development as a player.
You know, Matt played his first full season last year in Double-A. We pushed him. He got to a point where he was tired at the end of the season. So instead of sending him home, we actually pushed him to the Fall League to see how he would do, how he could respond. Wanted him to play shortstop every day because he and Ellie were splitting time in Chattanooga. We put him in the Fall League, and he was dead tired. But he's never played that long of a season before, and we thought it was a good test to see where he was. And you know, for as much as he struggled in the Fall League, it was great to see his grind through it. He grinds everything. So he came into spring training this year, and you know, we looked at it and said, okay, well, he did struggle in Double-A at the end of the year. Maybe we send him back there, but he played well in spring, both major league and minor league camp. We end up sending him to Triple-A. He took off. He takes good at-bats. He uses the whole field. He can play both second and short. Very athletic kid that can really run the bases. He's just a spark plug in your lineup.
It's funny that you mentioned that. You know, I had a conversation with Buck Showalter earlier this spring, and he goes, in his eyes, the sixth tool is the tool to post up. And he mentioned that he thought last year Brandon Nimmo, like, crossed that Rubicon. And you, as an evaluator, leader of baseball operations, that's got to be an important one.
Absolutely. I mean, if you got to be on the field, and you know, they're you're going to play through some injuries, you're going to play through some dings, and it's a tough season. It's a very long season. It's something where getting these guys to continue to progress and you know, work through it has been great to see. And that's a real testament to our scouting staff, our player development staff, and our major league staff trying to get, you know, bring kids in that are good players, but also work hard, do all the little things right. And, you know, he's been really good.
So you mentioned Andrew Abbott made his debut on Monday night, six scoreless innings. And I watched him pitch. I was thinking, man, the big thing maybe going for him is you just don't see guys like him anymore. He's kind of that funky left-hander, and there's not a lot of, you know, in this era in which so many guys just throw 99 miles per hour, he seems like he pitches.
He throws strikes, uses both sides of the plate, can pitch up and down, uses four pitches, and just keeps guys off balance. But he knows how to pitch. He knows how to go after a hitter. He knows what to do out there. And, you know, for him, it's been – he went to Double-A this year. He dominated Dayton last year, went to Double-A, struggled. We sent him back to Double-A to start the season, and he was lights out. He couldn't have been better. Went to Triple-A, you know, had a little bit ups and downs to start it with just his pitch-to-pitch command, and it's just something he's worked through. And, you know, last night he had a little nerves, I guess Monday night. He had a little nerves in at the beginning, walked a few batters, and then he was really good to – you know, I think he had 50 pitches through two innings and ended up pitching six. So it was really good to watch him just figure it out and learn how to pitch.
So this is about the time of year, you know, far better than I do, when the GMs are kind of contacting each other and feeling each other out. And what's your thought process? What are you hearing generally about the market, and what are you telling other teams?
I think for us, you know, we've had some conversations with some teams. I think it's a little bit of a wait and see. We've been bringing some younger players up. Let's see how they play. Let's see how they gel. And then we'll see what that does for our team and how we can improve our team as we go into the trade deadline. And, it'd be nice to be in a position where we were in 2020 versus 2022.
I was going to say, where you guys are now, and given the context of the division, I'm assuming, I don't mean to put words in your mouth, but you're not ruling anything out at this point in terms of how competitive you guys are within the division, how well you're playing.
Absolutely not. I mean, I think, you know, some of the players that we're getting to add to this team are coming internally from our system, with Ellie coming up, with Nick Lodolo coming back from injury. You know, we've got a handful of relievers coming back. Our bullpen's been pretty solid so far this year. So it's a wait and see. Let's see how we play and let's see where we are. And then we can address that and assess where we are and address the situation when we get to that point.
I lied. Joey Votto, tell me how close in your eyes he is.
He started a rehab assignment this weekend. I talked to him yesterday. He seems in good spirits. It's just getting his at-bats, and let's see how he feels. He feels great. He started rehab earlier in the year. Wasn't quite ready. Just had struggled to push through his shoulder. You know, you're coming off of major shoulder surgery. So he's been really positive and getting after it over the last several months. And, you know, he should be back hopefully in the next 3 weeks.
Nick, thanks for doing this. The debut of a prospect like Ellie De La Cruz, so much fun. Appreciate you taking the time.
Thanks, Buster. Appreciate you having me.
Bleacher Tweets.
All right, Buster. It is time for Bleacher Tweets. Our first one comes from Hillel. I'm unsure on how to pronounce your name. Very sorry. Armbarn Creef. Why do the outfield walls not have more padding and protection? Players too often get hurt crashing into the wall. I can't imagine that having Aaron Judge hurt is worth not investing into better padding.
So the reference there, Sarah, just so you know, is I think it was a couple of years ago when, you know, there's a conversation about whether or not bullpen was appropriate to call that area where relievers warm up. He suggested we call it arm barn. He liked that better. And so I think that that's where the moniker is there. Look, I agree with you. It was interesting the other day when we taped Eduardo Perez taped something with a couple of the Yankee support staff sort of replaying Judge's catch from the day before. And it jumped out at me in that spot where Judge went into the fence, that 6 inches of unprotected concrete at the bottom. And look, I'm not going to pretend to be Janet Marie Smith and an engineer and know what could happen. But when I looked at that, I'm like, why do you have that 6 inches of concrete at the bottom that's exposed? It does feel like that they could do an absolute fine print review of all these little nooks and crannies of ballparks everywhere, because you potentially could avoid a situation that we now have with Aaron Judge.
Next up is Elizabeth Hart. Can you please have future Cy Young winner Kevin Gausman on your podcast? I know you planned to previously and it didn't work out, but I think it's time to show this man some respect.
Yep, agree. He's one of the best pitchers on the planet right now. I'd love to have him on. We did have him lined up to make an appearance. I know Kevin, he's a great dude. Hopefully that'll happen at some point.
Kevin, this is an open invite. Next up, we have Kevin.
Yep.
Bunnell, Will Clark has to be in the conversation for sweetest left-hand swing.
Yep. I would co-sign that. He's in the conversation. His swing was absolutely beautiful.
Next up is Real Camp Drew, Andrew Campbell. Buster, I feel like if there was an expansion team going to be in Las Vegas, the new franchise would be like the Golden Knights hockey team, and everything about the franchise would be totally Vegas and wild.
So I'm not going to go deep into the weeds on this because there's so much going on with the state of Nevada and the legislature and how this is going to play out. It's gone from being a foregone conclusion that the Athletics should move to Las Vegas, and now it's an open question what their future is going to be. And I must say this, one huge difference between what the Golden Knights are doing, Drew, and what the Athletics, can you imagine, Sarah, how long it would take for the Athletics franchise to be in a position where they would be relevant? Like if you're, you know, going to sell a baseball team in Las Vegas, you'd want the fans to be all like, all right, here they come. You know, a team that's going to compete with the Yankees, the Dodgers. No, we are a million years away from that happening, considering how bad the Athletics franchise is right now.
Yeah, and I think, too, when you look at teams like the Raiders or the Golden Knights are such an exception because that's a Vegas team. Like, they're not coming from somewhere else. That team is made in Vegas. Right. And so it holds a special spot in the community of the people who are locals there. And the Raiders just had like this huge fan base just naturally that would shift wherever they went. So I think, yeah, I agree. Yep. It's a different situation. And last up, we have here for real. Do you think the amount of teams making the playoffs is encouraging to put guys on the IL to rest and ultimately water down the regular season? The Phillies Padres proved you just have to make it. Is the MLB becoming the NHL in that way?
Travis, I'll answer your question this way. I don't think it's the playoffs per se that are, you know, moving teams to doing this. I think it's just the access to better and more medical information. And I've related this story in the past, talking to Dr. James Andrews and somebody worked with Glenn Fleissig. They told me, this is 20 years ago, they said, as the medicine gets better, you're going to see more players spend time on the injured list. And when it's counterintuitive, but then when you really think about it, it made sense then and it makes sense now, because teams, doctors can diagnose injuries to the smallest degree. And so if you have a 10% tear of a ligament, the team can say, you know what, it's better to shut the player down, rest them up, get that right, so we don't lose them for a longer period of time. And that's why we have so many guys going on injured lists, because they can really dig into the nitty gritty of the injuries, as opposed to 50 years ago, where they basically say slap some dirt on it and just try to compete and stay active. So I think that's where the shift is.
And that is it for Bleacher Tweets. Be sure to submit your questions using hashtag Bleacher Tweets, and we will be back on Friday.
That's it for today. My thanks to Boo, to Nick Kroll, to Sarah. You've got Taylor listed here, Sarah. Like on my note here, in terms of who I'm supposed to thank, I'm supposed to thank Taylor. What's up with that?
He's always a part of the show. We always thank Taylor.
You haven't ripped him enough in his absence. I mean, you got free reign. He's like on a tee for you.
No, it was his fault about Monday. And I just need everyone to make that very clear. The reason,
that's true. Yeah, he was responsible for the plane being delayed, right?
Yes, it was. It 100% was his fault. The plane was delayed. He controlled that. That was on him. So everyone make sure that's clear. It's his fault.
And for that reason, we're going to specifically say, no thanks, Taylor, for today. Great day, everybody. Thanks for listening. Stay safe. And remember, hate and inequality based on skin color is something we need to fight against every single day.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this?
A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.